Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Dubcast with Dubside. I'm Andrew Lozaga.
And I'm Dubside. So we're up to Dubcast number, what is it, 17?
18.
18. 18.
So, Dubside, a couple weeks ago, we had Tim Galloway on the Dubcast.
Oh, yeah, Tim Galloway. Good guy. He was in Greenland a couple of years ago, and he is he's a ropes. He's like the Midwest ropes guy up in that area. Expert ropes dude. I saw him just a few months ago at in Minnesota.
Yeah, it was a great interview. I'll have to send you a copy. He said that he learned all the Greenland rolls by watching your rolling DVD one summer when he was working as a kayak guide.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that you are his Yoda.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So maybe we should call you Master Dubside from now on.
Well, I don't know about that.
What's the Greenland equivalent of that?
A Yoda?
Yeah, or of is there like a Greenland equivalent of sensei or master that they would use to address?
Oh, I don't know. Well, the coolest, you know, the people that have the very high standing would be in that society would be the hunters. So Pinyotok is a hunter. Pinyatarsuwak is a big hunter, a great hunter. So Pinyatarsuwak might be the term of respect or something like that.
I found it really interesting how he built his kayak after bringing the parts in a wooden crate to Greenland in the few days right before the competition.
That is one method of doing it, yeah.
And Tim said that while he was there, he ran into Keely Uyan.
Oh, yeah.
You know Keely.
Yeah, yeah. He is
the National Geographic photographer.
Very cool dude. He's like part Inuit. I think one of his parents is from like the Russian side of the Bering Strait or something, somewhere up there. And so he spent a lot of time in various Inuit places and has an understanding of the culture. Where we stayed for the competition, this was in Asiat a couple years back. He was staying in the room, the same place I was. So for a week, you know, we're hanging out.
Oh, wow. So you must have learned a lot about him.
Yeah. And he is, see, guys like that who are doing photography for the National Geographic magazine, they've got a lot of equipment, you know, big lenses and stuff. And they're pack horses. Like every time, you know, you can't not take your camera somewhere because you might see something cool. So you got a backpack and you've got all this stuff that you're always carrying because you got to be ready. And you almost feel sorry for these people that have to carry so much stuff around, but that's their job. He had a drone, you know, to take footage that way, and had you know, the big tripod and little tripod and stuff. So he would have to decide what combination of things he was going to take. But he always had something, you know, just to be ready for whatever the interesting might happen.
Well, soon after I interviewed Tim Galloway, I gave Keely a call, and we had a really good conversation, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be posting that interview in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
He had a lot to say about dealing with Indigenous people.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, he himself discovered his own Indigenous roots fairly recently.
Yeah. The first time I met him, he was doing a presentation about various things, you know, hunting deer and things. And then how you use the things you get. And he had on some pants made of deer skin that he had made himself, which impressed me quite a bit.
Wow, pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, I have the last few weeks, I wrote an article for the Masik, which is the Kayak USA newsletter, which anyone who's a member of Kayak USA can get that. And if you're not a member, I don't know if you can find it online, or I don't know if you need some password or what. But anyway, so I wrote an article about, since I went to all three of the Kayak USA events that happened this year, the only three that happened this year, I described, you know, how it all went and how we're trying to get back from the COVID thing, but we're not all the way out of the woods, but it seems to be getting there. So the article is entitled, "Is It Safe to Come Out Yet?"
Sounds good.
So I think in January they'll have that up and running on their website. People can read it.
And you can get the Masik on the Kayak USA website. They have an archive of old issues also.
Okay.
So you can find that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, well, then you can see how bad of a photographer I am.
That's great. You have pictures too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll stick to audio when I have to, but for this article, I threw a bunch of pictures in there. But, you know, I come back from these events and I look at one of the pictures I have in there, and they're all just awful. I'm not Keely, you know. I don't carry all this stuff and always look for the shot. When cool things are happening, either my camera's not even with me or my camera's in my pocket, I don't even take it out. So
yeah, yeah,
that's what I do.
So what's on the next episode?
This episode here, we're talking about Deception Pass, which is that special area of water up there in the Seattle surrounds that has a very powerful current that comes through back and forth every day with the tides. And there is, so I mentioned this big race they started having there years back, Deception Pass Dash. And is that still going on?
Yeah, in fact, it's it's on this Saturday.
Wow.
On the 11th.
Oh, coming right up. Oh, so this is very, very topical.
Yeah. We got this.
All right. Very cool. Yeah. I thought they had stopped having it, or they slowed down or something like that. I'm glad to see they're still doing it. It's very, very unique place to have a race. It's a very,
yeah. I think nice the setup. Race has changed management several times over the years.
Okay.
Now it's being organized by Rob Casey of Salmon Bay Paddle.
Well, I imagine they must have a good number of people doing it now, like probably, 100 or so, more than that, maybe?
I'm not sure. You know, I haven't gone for the last few years, and last year was canceled because of COVID.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But it'll be interesting to see how many people show up this time.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm ready to go ahead and hit play on the Dubcast number 18. Just wanted to say thanks to everyone for your likes and comments. Be on the lookout for Dubside's article in the upcoming issue of the Massic. Also, check out the show notes for more information on the Deception Pass Dash if you're interested.
All right, let's do it.
Welcome to the Dubcast with Dubside. This is Dubcast number 18, all about a place called Deception Pass, a place with lots of current, and I'll tell you about racing there, rolling there, paddling there, etc. Music this week by a guy named Inuk. In the state of Washington, the upper left corner of the continental United States, there is a town called Seattle, a city called Seattle. And north of Seattle, there is a number of islands, the San Juan Islands. There's a waterway called Puget Sound, which intersects all through the land up there. And there's one particular area where the water comes through a very narrow passage, and that is called Deception Pass. It actually splits into two, and there's an island in the middle. I think that's called Canoe Island or something like that. So on the one side it's called Canoe Pass, the other side is called Deception Pass. But at peak tide, the currents reach about 6 or 7 knots. And there's a bridge across that, but the bridge is way up high since the sides are very steep. So the bridge is something like 50, 75, maybe 100 feet above the water. And way down below it, the current comes roaring through there at maximum ebb and flow. And local kayakers have found it a very nice place to play and practice advanced skills in the swift currents. Now, if you read your tide tables, as any good sea kayaker has learned how to do, you can see when the current is fairly slack or when even the maximum current isn't as strong as it is other times. So you can go to Deception Pass when it's fairly tame, or you can wait for the really extreme tides, say with a full moon or the new moon, and get a real workout there. So it has all different levels, which makes it an ideal teaching environment, because you just select how fast the current goes for the level of student instruction you want to do. And to the inexperienced paddler, it looks very intimidating out there, especially when you drive over and look way, way down below you and see the current moving back and forth. But if you've got a roll like I do, there's not that much to be afraid of, especially if you're not that familiar with how currents can be dangerous. So the first time I was out there, some local paddlers took me out through there thinking, we're going to see what Dubside's made of. We're going to take him to the big water here. And I didn't feel any apprehension. If I get tipped over, I'll just roll. No big deal. And to get out to the actual pass, you put in at Bowman Bay, which is around the corner, so to speak. And this is Seattle, so the water, even in the summertime, is rather chilly. And you paddle around an island, and then you come up through the pass, and you see the big bridge up ahead. And that's where the current gets strong, and it can be going in or coming out, depending on when you go and what the tide tables say. And the first time I was there, I had the good fortune to be paddling with the guy who is the master of Deception Pass, who's been probably experimenting out there and learning all the waterways more than anyone else. His name is Warren Williamson. He's one of the area paddlers. And just about any time of year when the currents are at maximum, he can be found out in Deception Pass practicing his craft. I got out there with Warren, and we paddled up. I think the current was coming out. So we paddled in close, and you have to get right close to the side because you're trying to fight the current to get in there. And the middle of the passage is raging, but you get over to the side, and you might get a little bit of eddy current that's actually pushing you up against the main current, or you might not. When you come around the edge, you have to paddle really fast to pull into the next eddy and work your way up. And Warren had this whole area so locked in, so he's knowing every little spot, that he would tell me, okay, we're going to come up here, we're going to paddle as hard as you can around this here, we'll get around this point here, then we can play in this water here, we can pop out in and get pulled by the current down and then paddle the way back up. Now you see what you see back there, he pointed to a certain spot, it's that little outcropping there. If you get washed by the current, if you go past that, you cannot paddle back in the way this current is right now. It's just too strong. You will not make it back. You'll have to wait an hour or two for the current to die down, or you have to go all the way around to the other side and come back across. So be careful of that. Now, he knew all that stuff. And we went around to the other side, and he said, okay, now, to cross over, well, on this side, we can't go further because it gets too strong around that point there. So we have to cross over to the other side. If you try to ferry your way across, now ferrying is done by pointing your boat at a slight angle to one side, and then it's moving sideways even though you're pointing forward. And that way you compensate for running against a current. But he said, this current is so fast, to try to do a ferry angle and go over, sideways, it's just going to push you farther back. So you need to paddle straight across as hard as you can. It'll take you about 100 feet down to the other side, but you'll get to that side. And at that side, you can stick close to the edge and work your way back up. So you just like zigzag kind of pattern to work you to get up into where you want to go. And you'd paddle across and try it, but get pushed too far back and have to come back up again and do it a couple times. So or do it enough times so the current eased off a little bit. But he knew every little trick about where to go and what to do and how to get through. He was quite the expert. And Warren also knew the differences in what the water would offer between the current coming in, the flood current, and the ebb current coming back out. And he knew exactly when to get the which way the current needs to go and when it's at maximum to find these whirlpools that would form. And they'd, you know, they'd be up maybe like, I don't know, 15 feet or so in diameter. And they would just form and spin around for a little bit, then sort of fade out and go elsewhere. And so he would attempt to get his kayak into these whirlpools so it would spin them around just to play in there and have fun. Now, a beginner paddler would be terrified and probably even get knocked over and fall out, and it would be a very scary time. But Warren, that was his playground there. And so I got out there with him, and we did some spinning around. You could almost, if you try to get your sink your stern into the middle of the whirlpool, you can spin around with your bow pointing out before the whirlpool. You get maybe 10 or 15 seconds of that and get pushed down against the with the current until the whirlpool fades out, and then you spin out of it and go try to make your way back up. It was fun. Now, I didn't have any qualms about rolling because that's what I knew how to do, so it wasn't scary for me. But I could see that if you get right in the middle of a whirlpool, now these whirlpools, Warren knew, didn't get really, really big. They're places in the UK where the whirlpool will pull down an entire ship, or say a large motorboat, it will suck right in. So the water in a whirlpool spinning around is actually pulling down in the center. And so upside down, Warren explained to me, since he had so much experience doing this, the water is pulling your head. Your head comes in, gets to the middle of the whirlpool because the two ends of the kayak are at equal length. So they're spinning around while you're upside down if you go over. And the downward funnel of water is pulling your body down. Now there, it's not strong enough to pull you out of the kayak if you keep your legs tight the way you're supposed to when you're upside down. But Warren explained to me that if you take your paddle and set up and try to roll up, just bringing your paddle towards your body upside down, the water tends to pull the paddle away from you. And it's trying to snatch the water right out of your hand. I'm sorry, the paddle right out of your hand. And so he developed a special roll. And I thought I'd had every rolling possibility figured out, learning all these 30, 35 different competition maneuvers. But Warren had actually some new ideas for this particular situation. He said that if you set up with your body straight under the water or with the paddle in the center, that's where the water is pulling you down. So you need to lean way back behind you, put your head on the back deck even while you're upside down, and bring the paddle back there with you. And you reach out to the side with the paddle, and that way you're trying to keep the paddle out of that funnel of water that's pulling down, and then you can reach out to there's some more stable water out to the edge of the whirlpool and get yourself back up that way. And I it's hard to visualize, and he could explain or demonstrate a lot better than I could. But yeah, a special the whirlpool roll, in case you happen to be caught in a whirlpool, this is how you roll to get back up, by Warren Williamson. So when the current is coming out, people like to go over on the left side going in. It's called Canoe Pass over there. And you paddle up on the edge, and then you got the current just coming at you really strong. So you pop your bow out into it, and you get swept back while you do some maneuver and then come back around in a circle. And you just line up your students and just play there going around and around. And so Warren and I, we're over there. There's some other people there. Somebody's doing a class. We're hanging out. And we're just thinking of, you know, cool things to do. So he says, let's stick your bow out into the current and get swept back, and then just do a roll as you come through, you know, just to have something fun to do, because we had reliable rolls. So we've pop out there. Now the water there, since there's current raging through it back and forth every 6 hours, the amount of stuff, nutrients, you know, little plankton, all that stuff, is vast going through there. So you have the barnacles, oysters, all those shelled creatures that stick on the side and catch the little things going by as their food. They are just covering the rocks. You know, you've got barnacles on barnacles. That is the prime real estate for a barnacle. So the sides of these things are very sharp with the edges of these shells. And when you're trying to paddle really close to the side to fight the current going up or back, You want to stay close in so you don't have as much current to fight. But if you get too close, you're against these sharp barnacles and it'll chew up your kayak. And so my folding kayak, I think the first time through there, took some battle scars doing that. So it must have been a year or so later. We're out there. We're playing in the currents, and we figured, hey, let's try this. You know, do a roll as you go through there. So I figured I'll just try a hand roll because you know that's I don't got a confident hand roll. So I put the I paddle out through and pop through into the current, and then I put the paddle on the deck and come get spun around, and then I'm doing a samik masikut, which is the forward hand roll where you. As I say in my video, you got to reach your arm way out to the side as you're upside down, up to the surface, then sweep it all the way underneath you in a big wide arc. So I do that, and my hand proceeds to hit the barnacles, slicing the skin on my fingers. And I come back up with a bloody hand and realize this was not a good idea. So even, probably my gloves would have helped, or they would have sliced up the gloves a little bit, but those barnacle edges are like razor blades, and so I learned not to try that particular hand roll in that situation. Well, I started out there about 2005 or 6, and sometime after that, actually I could look it up in my logbook. Let me see. This was December of 2006, and it was billed as the first Deception Pass Dash, a race through the pass. You had this line up in Bowman Bay, starting there, and then go outside around. There's an island sort of downstream, and then you come around that and enter the pass, go all the way through up around another marker, and then come back, and then all the way around that first island back to Bowman Bay. And it was, that's, I don't know, 5-10 miles, something like that. And they timed the race so that if you were very fast, they expected to be the head of the pack, you would get the current in both directions. So there would be flooding in, and then when you turned around, the current would turn around, and you get the current coming back out. So they the first year they did this, and I entered, and there was, maybe 20, 30, not more than 40 or 50 kayaks entered the race. And I, you know, if somebody asked me if I wanted to do it, I'd say, yeah, looks like a cool thing. I'll race that. And I, since I'm supposed to be Mr. Rolling, you know, Dubside the expert roller, I took my Feathercraft. I think I had the Feathercraft Whisper I was using then, and I had it all decked out for rolling. So it's got the lower back deck rib in it, so it lowers the rear, so I can lay back easier, and that affects the performance somewhat. And I knew that makes it not quite as fast, but you know, since I'm Mr. Roll, I have to be able to demonstrate my rolling skills at the drop of a hat, right? Whenever anybody says roll, I got to show them the trick. So they start the race, and I realize that other people, in fact, all the other people seem to be thinking of it as somewhat more of a serious race, even the people that weren't, you know, expert racers, but they had more appropriate racing kayaks. And I noticed that my kayak, that Feathercraft Whisper, is about, I think it's under 16, it might be, it's under 16 feet. Yeah, 15 feet, 7 inches, something like that. So I actually had the shortest kayak in the racing lineup. And as per the laws of physics, that would give me the shortest hull speed. And as per the laws of what happened there, there were maybe one or two people dropped out of the race, but the last place person was me. And I got my little ribbon that said Finisher Deception Pass Dash, first annual, but I was dead last. Yes, indeed. Now, they had it again the next year. So this is 2007. And so that time, I borrowed a kayak that was a little more appropriate for a race in. And there was this... By then, it would be a little more prestige to win this race. So there were guys coming from way out of the country. You know, it's like another big deal race. I forget if there was prize money involved, but there was some serious, you know, like surf ski kind of stuff there. Guys who really had trained, you know, on the Maligiac level, you could say. Although Maligiac was not there. And so they tried to set it up so that the current helps the people in the front of the pack. But it's hard to predict totally what's going to go on. So we take off, and I'm not, you know, in the, I'm not at the, I'm coming up the rear. There's some people behind me, so I'm doing pretty good. I got a okay kayak. There's at least 10 or 20 people. We might have had 60 or 70 kayaks this by this time. Word had gotten around. It's a fun race to do. So I start going in, getting right into the pass, into the where the current is the strongest. And by that time, since more than half of the field was ahead of me, the current had changed, and I'm fighting it, and I'm really having to keep very tight to the edge, and just poking around the points, the little points there, and then have the, you know, as fast as I can pop through that and then get back to the side after that. And I'm thinking, as hard as it is for me to get through this, because the current's getting strong coming at me, I'm thinking there are people several minutes behind me, and they're going to have a really hard time. They may not make it through, but that's not my problem. So I just kept on paddling through. So I finished the race, and I wasn't last, but there was a good, I don't know, 15 or 20 kayaks behind me that did not finish the race because the current had just gotten too strong. They couldn't overcome the current, so they couldn't complete the course of the race. So they didn't get their little ribbons that said Deception Pass Dash Finisher. But I got two of them. And in the years after that, I was busy with other things and did not race again. But the race continued to grow. It's a very, very unique place, very unique conditions to do a race in with a current like that. And a year or two later, they had a bit more wind. The weather conditions were a little bit more severe, and it's hard to know how severe things are going to get. When you've got a very strong wind opposing a very strong current, it tends to make for very big waves. Well, that occurred. I guess the winds got a bit stronger than they thought, and a number of the people racing, you know, they may be up on racing, but they're not really experiencing big heavy, you know, big wave water, especially in a tippy racing kayak. And there were some serious rescues had to be done. A lot of people in conditions far more than they were used to, and they were a little short-handed on the rescues, and it was quite a mess. The top kayakers got through and finished okay, but some of the people farther back had a heck of a time in the very rough water. And I think the year after that, they overcompensated. They have, you know, a full fleet of rescue, every kind of rescue conveyance they could think of. And the water was quite calm. The winds didn't pick up. And so there was nothing much for the rescuers to do. But you can never tell what the conditions are going to provide. And that race went on for many, many years. I don't think they have it anymore. It kind of faded out. The organizers changed hands, and, you know, things happen. But Deception Pass is still there, as it's always been. That's not going to change for quite some time. And I believe Warren Williamson still lives in that area and can be seen in the pass with his kayak. I've taught classes. I did more rolling classes in Bowman Bay, so we didn't paddle all the way out into the pass. But I recall one particular time I was teaching with some good friends from way back. That's Leon Sommet and Shauna. Leon and Shauna from Body Boat Blade. They had an operation. They're not teaching anymore these days, but they were in Orcas Island, one of the islands in the San Juans. And they had for a long time, they were teaching and doing classes, high-level training in that area. And so Leon asked me to do a rolling class with him, and Shauna was there too, in Bowman Bay. And we had, I don't know, 10 or 12 people for a morning and into the afternoon, a lunch break in the middle. And did my shtick that I do for my rolling classes, and some on stretching on land and into the water, and do some one-on-one and some group stuff, demonstration, and then work with each person at whatever level they're at and try to get more of the Greenland rolls to work for them. And we had a pretty good day. So at the end of the class, I had taken my, well, I think it was my Feathercraft Whisper kayak, and I would put it together at the start of the class and then take it apart. And so we were going to, there's a very nice restaurant. What is that? Deception Pass Cafe or something like that, up in that area. That's like that home-cooked menu stuff and a lot of special items. Very nice place to go after you have been on the water for a day. And I was in a hurry to take my kayak apart. I can usually take it apart fast enough to be the same amount of time as the people who are strapping their kayaks to the roof. And I was knocking the cross ribs to knock the member out of the cross rib. You can knock that, smack it really hard with your hand. So we get to the restaurant and we hang out and we talk. It's a nice wind down from the day. And I get back home and my wrist was feeling kind of unusual, but I just, you know, it's the aches and pains of a day of rolling instruction. But as I went to bed, I thought, oh, that feels a little different. That's a different kind of sensation. You know? I hope I didn't break my wrist there. You know, that would be a problem. So I went to bed and I wrote, oh, no, I didn't break this. It just kind of hurts a bit. It'll get better. I woke up the next morning and I felt my wrist and I said, ooh, this wrist is broken. And that is indeed what I had done. I had gone to, in such a hurry to take the kayak apart and hit the one piece to knock it out of the crossbar with my hand the wrong way and broke my wrist. And I can tell from my logbook that actually it was a 2-day rolling class. So October 29th, 2005, we did the first day. And the second day, the end of the second day, is when I broke my wrist, fortunately, so we could at least finish the 2 days of class. And had to stay off the water. The next time I was in the water was December at a pool session during the wintertime. So I had to stop paddling for at least a month so my hand could heal. Our musical selection this week comes from a group called Inuk, I-N-U-K, Inuk, which is actually technically means person. You know, the word for person is Inuk, and so the plural for Inuk would be Inuit, as they say, the Inuit people. And they formed that, the two main guys in this group formed that term from their names. They are Inusuak Petrusen and Nukunguak Kayusen. Inusuak appears to do most of the songwriting. And I believe he is possibly some relation to, you remember Isavarak Petrusen from way back when, that song called Ekosachit, who was the frontman for the band Aleut, the reggae-influenced band. That is either someone's maybe father or grandfather here, so they are in a musical family. And so Inuk has done a few CDs, and the one we are dealing with here came out in 2015, and the song is called Angusasak. And they have not seen fit to put English translations in the notes of this CD, so I am not going to take a guess at what this means, but towards the end of the chorus, there is one word in there that you should be able to pick out, and that is Ayungilak. And you remember what that means, Ayungilak? Remember washing the laundry? Ayungilak ayapok, Ayungilak ayapok. Ayungilak means it's good, it's all right, or in the case of laundry, it is clean. So, Ayungilak, everything is all right. Here is group Inuk, song called Angusasak. Nagama takau supara namminek Sunatama shdu akau sushdu kisimai
Peel mijn vegelijstonden in minuut. Angusasak is de kangelak. Ilumut. Usta kulita rangama taki sok Ato salash dunga makikuma Tachas sudusash dugu takuara Imenushtu kafe garunga Ayungira Nata mata kousu para naminek Sunata mashdua kousu shtugu kisimai Piuma figila shtunga imminut Angusasa kishtikangilak hirumut
As per my usual instructions, you can get this and just about all the other Greenland CDs I've given you samples of on this dubcast at the website atlanticmusic.gl. Group is called Inuk. Album is called Anuyalanak. Cover of the CD says Inuk, and it has a close-up shot of one of the guy's lower face, side view, mouth and nose. I think this, like a lot of the artwork or cover work on these CDs of recent times, has been done by Christian Elsner, one of the Nanook frontmen I've told you about before. Coming up in episode 19, I'll take you back to Philadelphia and tell you of my adventures on public transportation going kayaking. Things you'd never encounter if you always get to the water with a car. Thank you for listening to the Dubcast.